What a prestigious evening, and I'm so thrilled, Jess, to be a part of this thing, because history is going to be made right here in the Horizon tonight as this very prestigious 16-man elimination tournament takes place.
That's right, Gorilla. I'm pumped up. I'm here to call it like it is, as Jesse the Body always does, and Chicago and the world, get ready.
What's the crack, fellas? Jay Hunter here with Old School Wrestling's Video Classic Reviews, or OSW Reviews, with episode #002. The next big WWF event after WrestleMania 1 wasn't WrestleMania 2, it was WWF's first experimental foray into pay-per-view, the Wrestling Classic.
The World Wrestling Federation presents WrestleVision. From the Rosemont Horizon in Chicago, Illinois, it's the Wrestling Classic. Tonight, a 16-man elimination tournament featuring Ricky Steamboat, Adrian Adonis, Tito Santana, Cowboy Bob Orton, Ivan Putski, Randy Savage, The Junkyard Dog, Terry Funk, Paul Orndorff, Moondog Spot, Corporal Kirshner, The Magnificent Morocco, The British Bulldogs, Davey Boy Smith, and The Dynamite Kid, Nikolai Volkov, and The Iron Sheik. In addition, the announcement of the winner of the Rolls-Royce Silver Cloud 3. Plus, in the main event, a world heavyweight title bout. Rowdy Roddy Piper challenges the champion Hulk Hogan. And now, Vince McMahon.
Yep, that's right. Jay Hunter doing this one solo. We originally weren't going to cover this pay-per-view, but I thought I might as well, since it's somewhat of a landmark in the WWF. The lads will be back next time. Right off the bat, the opening video, filmed in WrestleVision, with Back to the Future's Back in Time theme, that is awesome. So what is the Wrestling Classic? It's the very first WWF pay-per-view exclusive. Well, I say exclusive because WrestleMania was almost completely shown on the closed circuit TV. It was broadcast in theatres, that kind of thing, having an almost negligible amount of pay-per-views. So technically the first WWF one was WrestleMania 1. But the Wrestling Classic was the first WWF pay-per-view exclusive. From suburban Chicago's Rosemont Horizon, which is now known as the Allstate Arena in Rosemont, Illinois, taking place on November 7, 1985, which, if you're keeping track, that's 3 weeks before NWA Starrcade, so that's no coincidence. The event featured a 16-man tournament and a WWF Championship match, Hulk Hogan defending the strap against Roddy Piper. Just FYI, the champions going into this pay-per-view were as follows. The WWF champion was Hulk Hogan since January 84, almost into a year and a half. The WWF women's champion was Wendy Richter, who won at WrestleMania 1 in March earlier in the year. The IC champion was Tito Santana since July. And the WWF tag team champions were Brutus Beefcake and Greg Valentine since August. The Wrestling Classic was hosted by Vince McMahon and Lord Alfred Hayes in front of a big tournament billboard. And Eye Candy Susan was there with a pointer as Vince runs down the first round matches. Vince throws to a video of wrestlers picking their opponents out of a fishbowl, and Savage drops a "Do the thing" comment to Elizabeth. Yes.
Do
the thing. Throw to WWF President Jack Tunney and Mean Gene as they poorly reiterate the tournament rules. The commentary is by Gorilla Monsoon and Jesse Ventura. Man, it's great to hear them and Finkel doing ring announcing. Monsoon and Ventura have such great chemistry, both sounding very credible, adding a lot of colour to the matches without ever actually overshadowing the match, which is quite a difficult thing to do. Although Monsoon was play-by-play, he wasn't always 100% calling moves correctly, sometimes relying on generic phrases, you know, a technique that McMahon would master many years later. Alright, so let's get into the pay-per-view. The first round match is Adrian Adonis with manager Jimmy Hart versus Corporal Kirshner. To be honest, I thought he'd be a heel with that name, but no, Kirshner is the face and Adonis is the heel. Kirshner, he's also known in Japan as the masked Leatherface, if you're keeping track. Monsoon notes that Ventura and Adonis were a tag team called the East-West Connection. I forgot that Jimmy Hart would shout instructions and motivation to his wrestlers via the microphone. So going through this match, there's a long headlock spot by Kirshner, Monsoon notes that Adonis has bulked up, aka he's put on a fair whack of weight. Another great example of wrestling logic as Adonis winds up his arm before delivering an elbow drop makes no sense. Adonis had most of the offense. He wins in just over 3 minutes, reversing a suplex attempt where Kirshner couldn't remember where his hands go into a DDT. I love how in the 80s pinfalls are more realistic. Kirshner kicked out at a 3.1 and heel Adonis bolts from the ring afterwards. They replay the finishing spot, as you can see that Kirshner takes the DDT bump on his ear. He must have thought Kane had a bump. If he takes moves like Triple H's pedigree on his knee, he doesn't actually take the full bump. So we cut to Oakland, who gets a quick interview with Adonis and Hart. Overall, it was a short nothing match. There's likely a lot of this to come in the pay-per-view. It's probably why single night tournaments like King of the Ring were generally cut down to just the quarterfinals and then just the semi-finals on the night. So the next first round match is Dynamite Kid, which is one half the British Bulldogs, face the Soviet Nikolai Volkov. Man, it's great, we get to see the precursor to Benoit himself. Volkov does the Soviet national anthem shtick to great heel heat, as we can see some people leaving in the crowd. Brilliant. Dynamite is absolutely ripped. Oh, Jesus. Dynamite gets the win with an unexpected dropkick. Great booking to have Billington advance quickly, the crowd loved it. Dynamite did a forward somersault in joy. It's pretty impressive, alright. It's pretty cool to see such a massive Roydy Magoo do something so athletic. 10 seconds, and we're done.
Thank you, Elizabeth.
Oh,
yes. Elizabeth, you're...
Oh, it's so exciting. It's just the most exciting night for me.
Cut to Oakland chatting to Savage. Holy shit, did Elizabeth just talk? All she says was, it's so exciting. It's such an exciting night for me. But I always thought the only words she spoke in the WWE were, ooh yeah, in response to her marriage proposal. There's a trivia question for you. Gene goes over his match with Ivan Putski. Liz sounded very uneasy on the mic, but that makes sense since she's not a wrestler. She's a manager, though. Well, she should be able to talk, but I guess she's just a valet, you know? Alright, the next match is Macho Man Randy Savage with his manager, Miss Elizabeth, taking on Polish power, Ivan Putski. Yes, Ivan Putski, the Polish power. Father of the famed Scott Putski, the most ridiculously ripped wrestler in the Attitude Era. He had one pay-per-view appearance in the WWF in Ground Zero 1997, where he blew out his knee in a matter of minutes and never appeared on WWF TV again. Of course, WCW picked him up for a cup of tea. Putski shows his confidence by goading Savage to take a free shot. Disgusting that Paduski, that's what Ventura calls him, spat in Savage's face. Also, Monsoon quips that Savage did that to him first. Macho plays the small guy that is easily overpowered by Putski, despite being at least 4 inches smaller than Savage, who isn't a small guy. Putski does the I'm not taking the head into the turnbuckle spot, which is pretty awesome. We never see that today. Putski continues with the basic power moves, and then Macho shoots for a single leg and gets Putski in a pin, using the ropes in kind of classic heel flare style. Yeah, that's it, he gets the pin. Another short match, under 3 minutes. Man, 80s wrestling is very slow, but it works well with short matches.
McMahon, I've seen Russia who laughs laugh, he laughs the best, and I've not finished my laughing yet.
Backstage, Vince shows the updated tournament board as Volkov interrupts giving out. He says, he who laughs last laughs the best, and I'm not finished laughing yet. What? Alright, next match. In a rare face-versus-face matchup, Ricky the Dragon Steamboat battles the other half of the British Bulldogs, Davey Boy Smith, who was just as Roydy Magoo as Dynamite. Nice mat wrestling counters to start the match. Monsoon calls Steamboat Steamer. Lovely bridge spot out of the pinfall. Even in standard def, you can see Davey's steroid-induced back knee. Nasty. Monsoon mentions that it's not smart to not hook the leg. Davey controls the match until Steamboat counters a suplex attempt with a delayed vertical suplex of his own. The ref calls for the bell very quickly after the Bulldog gets crotched by the top rope. I've never seen this particular finish before. Maybe he pulled his groin or something. Well, it's one way to have the match end but not have a big time face do the job so quickly. Yeah, the big steamer advances. Back to Oakland and JYD. He cuts a serious face promo. Oakland pushes that Chicago is my kind of town. It must be some popular song in 1985. Okay, so the next match is the master of the Big Thumb Power Slam, Junkyard Dog, facing Iran's number one and former WWF champion, the Iron Sheik. JYD gets his theme song, Grab Them Cakes. Good job, WWF. just mentioned, there's no Blassie coming out with Sheik. Sheik gets the early heel advantage with some awful chops and choking him with his garb. JYD does a Hogan no-sell, then Sheik bows to him for mercy. It's a bit early for that. JYD counters with a full Nelson with a butt bump. I love Sheik's setup to the camel clutch with his hands out and how he stepped into it. The two are chatting with the ref and just ended the spot. It was really weird. Sheik manhandles the ref and turns the headbutt into a pin, and JYD gets the pin in 3.5 minutes. I hate when refs incorporate the dropping to the mat with the one count. So it just looks like a two count. Anyway, so JYD advances. So we cut to Terry Funk, who wants a shot at Paul Orndorff and wants $50,000 to wrestle Roddy Piper, who's going to become the world's heavyweight champion. I have no idea what this guy is talking about. Oh, man, Funk gobs into the camera, his tobacco obscuring it. It's disgusting. Okay, so we got three more first round matches up. So the next one is Moondog Spot battling Terry Funk. There sure are a lot of dogs in the WWF. Moondogs, Junkyard Dog, British Bulldog, Michelle McCool. Ayo! The list goes on. Okay, so Funk cuts a heel promo asking both to settle for a draw, which bone-holding hobo Moondog Spot agrees with. Hilariously, Funk turns on him in a matter of a few seconds, and they brawl at the outside, but Funk can't get into the ring before being caught, and Spot gets into the ring before the 10 count. So, another creative finish. Yeah, I loved it. You know, 30 seconds and we're done. Moondog Spot with the upset. Who is this homeless man, Moondog Spot? He's like a white Kimbo Slice.
Do anything to you. I feel so sorry for you, boy son.
Okay, so cut to an interview with Fuji and Don Morocco. Fuji says he feels so sorry for Tito. That's just racist. Morocco, who's supposed to be a heel, mind you, says Tito's got it all and he's the best and he wants to beat the best. Awful. Well, you know, by this point you can see there's definitely a formula to this pay-per-view interview match. Okay, so the next match is the IC champion Tito Santana against the man he defeated for the title, the Magnificent Morocco, with Mr. Fuji. Gorilla says that this match would be a main event anywhere in the entire world. I don't know about that. The commentators tout the altruism of Tito being in this tournament. Apparently the IC champ didn't have to be in it. Why wouldn't you want to compete on a pay-per-view and in a tournament? Well, I guess there's nothing at stake, but faces aren't concerned with that. I love wrestling logic. Back and forth to start the match, Morocco does a poor man's flair corner spot. I could swear Tito reversed the whip to the ropes, but Morocco didn't want to run, so he just took a back bump and Tito continued the armbar. It's a disgrace. Morocco gets the three after a power slam near the ropes. The camera intentionally doesn't show where Tito's feet are. Morocco foolishly celebrates as Tito rolls him up for the legit three in 4.5 minutes. I see what you did there. The commentators work it out slowly and explain that Santana's foot was over the ropes, making Morocco's pin null and void, and Tito got the quick win. I guess that rule's not enforced these days, unless you seem to have to grab the rope, but it should be legal that you just put your foot under the rope. The rules that suit the booking, I guess. Anyway, backstage, Oakland interviews Heenan, who fobs off why his wrestlers aren't in this tournament, and gets upset about Gene using the word weasel. He sells the storyline that he's got a $50,000 bounty on Mr. Wonderful, Paul Orndorff's head. Okay, the final match of the first round pits Mr. Wonderful, Paul Orndorff, against Ace Cowboy Bob Orton. Robert Keith Orton, the original RKO, he plays the heel, complete with the trademark cast on his left forearm. The commentators put over the bounty on Orndorff's head as he starts off hot working on the left arm of Orton. Countered sunset flip, which results in Orton getting his builder's bum out. Orton slows down the pace, generally working on the head. Orndorff is surprisingly over. Mr. Wonderful is quite a heel gimmick. Wonderful punches Cowboy, who bumps over the top rope and lands Undertaker style on his feet. He adjusts cast to possibly tighten it, I guess, and smashes Orndorff in the face in full view of the referee and gets DQ'd in 6.5 minutes. How he's able to compete in the ring with a cast but not use it as a weapon is debatable. I guess, well, it's not like he took it off and hit him with it, so I don't know. As with all of these matches, they only last a few minutes, so it's hard to describe if they're really any good, you know. They're either under 3 minutes or up to 6 minutes at most. Backstage, McMahon and Alfred Hayes, who seems to be playfully manhandling the valet, Susan, go over the updated brackets. So what we have in the quarterfinals are Adonis versus Dynamite, Macho Man versus Steamboat, JYD versus Moondog, and Tito versus Orndorff. Terry Funk interrupts and starts giving out to Vince, his back to the hard camera. You can see, if you have a look, McMahon actually slightly pulls Funk's tights to turn him towards the camera, which he half does. Brilliant. Okay, so we're on to the quarterfinal matches with a 15-minute time limit. Dynamite Kid versus Adrian Adonis. Okay, before each match starts, the Fink tells us which wrestler the participants have beat to progress. Adonis looks in worse shape than Husky Harris, and maybe his nickname Adonis is just a rib on his physique. Even after a few moves, he looks gassed. After a minute, Ventura walks out, leaving the commentary booth to go talk to Savage. Adonis slows the pace and works on the left leg really slowly. He locks in a sharpshooter, which is deemed a leg grapevine by Gorilla. Dynamite gets cut off with a comeback, but on second attempt, builds up to a big head of steam, a couple of headbutts, a snap suplex. Jimmy Hart gets onto the apron. Adonis gets Dynamite in an O'Connor roll, which is reverses. Dynamite shows Adonis into Hart, who sells like death as Billington gets the pinfall. Afterwards, Adonis throws a Christian circa 2002 hissy fit in the ring. Decent enough, 5.5 minutes though. Backstage, Ventura cuts a promo putting over Macho Man, saying two heads are better than one, and they've got three heads. That being Ventura, Macho Man, and Liz. Mean Gene called Steamboat the Steamer again, so good for him. So the next match, Ricky the Dragon Steamboat versus Mr. I've Got Theme Music, Macho Man, Randy Savage. At the start of the match, Macho Man hides behind Liz, but tries a cheap shot Steamboat, and Gorilla calls it a Pearl Harbor job. Dragon gets Savage in a head scissors and takes him over the top rope. It's at this point I notice there's no outside padding on the floor, just concrete. Who'd want to take a bump on that? The two work a very fast pace, which is really enjoyable. Lots of top rope action. Steamboat starts off in control with chops, etc. Savage gets the brass knuckles from his tights, and when Steamboat back body drops him, Savage hits Steamboat in the face once with it, which he sells very well. Savage gets a three as he stuffs it back into his tights and does a legger afterwards. Shame this match only lasted about 3.5 minutes. It's just an angle, really, but you can tell the two are very good workers. Backstage, Mean Gene is with Moondog Spot. Moondog has a large leg bone in his hand. He starts hitting it with his head and muttering incoherently as Mean Gene gives up as Ventura puts over Savage again. Okay, so the second quarterfinal match is Moondog Spot versus JYD. I noticed that JYD, his security entourage, has a lot of brothers. These two, gimmick-wise, they should make a great tag team. Moondog misses a top rope splash, which was telegraphed way ahead of time. JYD does two headbutts from running on all fours, then a standing headbutt, and then counts his own fall. There's no ref. The fans cheer and the bell rings, and the unseen official outside counts it as a win. He counts his own fall. Backstage, Heenan tells Mean Gene that Piper's going to be the next WWF champion because Hogan's tired. Okay, so we got Paul Orndorff versus Tito Santana, which is another face-versus-face match. Ventura postulates that Santana will turn heel and take out Orndorff for the money. He calls him a taco salesman from Tijuana, Mexico. It's quite a slow, methodical match. Tito starts off with a long, snug headlock and a long head scissors. Orndorff turns a hammerlock into a chicken wing. That's a word or a move we don't hear about these days, you know? A couple of reversals and two standoffs. It's clear that both are working as baby faces. Orndorff applies a toehold, which is all sell by Tito. The crowd starts to get a bit restless because this match is just at a standstill. Story of the match is Tito's injured left leg. The two brawl outside as the ref administers the fastest 10 count in history. After 8 minutes, that's what you get. The two continue to brawl as the ref calls for the bell and the two break up. Thus far, this is longest and slowest match with a bullshit finish. Jesus. Back to Vince in the brackets. Hayes gives the valet Susan a smooch. Well, she's not struggling, so yeah, I guess 50 no's and a yes is a yes. So in the semi-finals, we have Dynamite Tom Billington versus Randy Savage, and JYD gets a bye in the finals. Okay, so the next match is WWF Champion Hulk Hogan versus Roddy Piper, face versus heel. Wow, this is a WrestleMania main event quality matchup. Hopefully he doesn't follow the trend of the matches before, and we'll see. Piper looks really young. He's be 31 at the time, and he comes out with a group of Scottish bagpipers. Backstage, Hogan cuts a promo. His ripped headband and wisp of hair makes his egghead look so big. Anyway, Hulk name drops WrestleMania 1 and says Piper's gonna have egg on his face, verbally and physically. Okay. Hogan's sporting a white American made t-shirt and matching tights, knee pads and boots. This must be before he exclusively wore red and yellow, brother. Crowd are very behind Hogan. Hulk starts off strong as Piper does a flare flop. Gorilla calls a back body drop a suplex. Two big elbow drops. Hulk is dominant here. It's like he hulked up before Piper got in any offense. Just a brawling match, and eventually Piper gets control of the match. A bit of overselling tiredness at the start of the match. Long sleeper spot where Hulk keeps the arm up on the three count. I think people winning with the sleeper is more of a WCW thing. Well, I suppose if you don't count the Million Dollar Man. They brawl outside as some fan throws his pop at Piper, misses by a mile as security find out who it was. Hulk mini no-sells, Piper axe handles Hogan into the ref for a bump, chair shot to the back as garbage starts to be thrown into the ring. Hogan gets the chair, uses it, and gets in a sleeper of his own. Ace Orton comes out and attacks Hogan for the DQ. Gorilla drops another Pearl Harbor line as Orndorff makes a save. The match never got out of first gear and was 7 minutes and change. Cut to the fans, one of which rubs his nose with his middle finger. Hogan and Orndorff left the ring, posing together.
Going real good, Mean Gene. Everybody's into the match. We have some great matches tonight. I just watched some of that match with Hulk Hogan. What a hell of a match. Him and Ryder Piper just had. I'm hoping so, Mean Gene. I'm hoping so. I worked real hard for it. I've been training off about 2.5 weeks real heavy. I dropped down from 285. I'm down about 266. Mean Gene, I'm getting ready.
All right. Well, Junkyard Dog, I'd have to say that if anything happens here tonight and you should win, we may be doing a little juking in Chi-Town.
We'll go down to Chi-Town to win the center and let everything blow, baby. All right.
Anyway, JYD cuts an incomprehensible promo at 100 miles per hour that I'm going to make you listen to, as Mean Gene reiterates that he's got a bye in the finals. Jimmy Hart interrupts, talking about his red underwear. Okay, so we've got two matches left. So this is the first and only semi-final match because JYD is in the final. So we got Dynamite Kid versus Randy Savage for a spot in the final, and only Savage gets entrance and music. Savage comes out with a new America cloak, it's nice. Savage can't get the best of Dynamite, so he works the crowd on the outside. I can't get over Dynamite's size. You know, he's only a few inches smaller than Savage, but it's far thicker. Anyway, lots of reversals, so the match is very equal. Gorilla says Macho scales the rope like a monkey. The finish comes when Dynamite hits a top rope superplex, but goddammit, Savage hooks the leg and gets the three. How is this possible after taking a suplex? I suppose the logic can only be found in the mysterious book of wrestling rules. Clocking in at under 5 minutes, it was far too short, but it was still match of the night. McMahon and Susan plugged the Silver Cloud 3 Rolls Royce that a fan's gonna win. Great. Apparently they had hundreds and thousands of entries over the last month. The crowd don't really care. They only perk up when someone throws a soda in the ring, almost hitting one of the stiffs. Great job, Michael Hamley from Illinois. Lord Alfred tries to work the crowd, who have none of it, and start booing him.
Let's give him a real good Chicago cheer. Come on.
Not spelled the end of trying to get buys by hawking a lottery. Not that you even have to be in attendance to win. In the men's locker room, Gene talks to Hogan and then Orndorff cuts a lame ringy-ding-ding promo on Orton and Piper and abruptly cut off. I'll make sure you gotta listen to that one.
Well, you know what's so funny about the whole situation, Mean Gene, is everybody expected this man, but nobody knew it was gonna take 4.5, 5 months to get done, you know. Well, ring-a-ding-ding, Roddy Piper, round two. And guess what? Neither one of us have had enough, Piper, you or me. And the way it looks, your cowboy Bob Orton, ace bodyguard, he wants some of it too. Well, you know something? My brother, Mr. Wonderful, Paul Orndorff, we kind of watch each other's back, you know. We kind of always watch each other's back. And we got one thing to say. Roddy Piper, anywhere, anytime, any place, you, the cowboy Bob Orton, want to step in the ring for ringy ding ding round three, brother.
You got it. You know something, Hunter?
So we're down to the main event of the night, the final match of the tournament. Randy Savage versus Junkyard Dog. Bink says this match will determine the championship in the elimination tournament. What championship? What does the winner get exactly? Gorilla says there's prestige to be won, but that's the same as every match, I guess. Savage comes out with a new headband and tie-dye shirt. There's a real nice cleavage shot as the cameraman watches Liz get up on the apron and holds the rope open for Savage. Again, Savage uses Liz as a human shield and escapes via the outside. There's lots of stalling heel tactics from Savage. Savage gets the chair and another. He throws the second to the ring, but JYD bangs his own head repeatedly on it and throws it out to a great pop from the crowd. I guess he, like foreigners, have extremely hard heads, and so chair shots have no effect. Makes sense, I guess, as his offense includes a lot of headbutts. JYD plays powerhouse, Savage playing tired from having wrestled an extra match. For some reason, Mean Gene gets on commentary. JYD beats up Savage with simple moves with a deliberate pace. This match is just a brawl, mostly punches and kicks. Ventura says JYD makes no bones about beating up Savage. Savage turns the tide. After a double axe handle from the top rope, Savage gets in the ring and out another side, and sneak attacks JYD. That's more wrestling logic. As Oakland drops the third, a Pearl Harbor reference. The ref sees him using a chair shot to the back of JYD, but he doesn't call for DQ. Even Mean Gene brings it up. Heel Savage beats up JYD on the outside, breaking up the 10 count. Three running on all fours headbutts, super sold by Savage, and JYD gets back in control. JYD back body drops Savage onto the outside, which gets a big pop, and the ref, Dave Hebner, has the fastest screw job 10 count since earlier in the night. And fucking hell, the pay-per-view finishes on a countout. 10 minutes in the main event for that. What a bloody rip-off. Ventura gets in the ring and complains, saying that JYD hasn't wrestled as many times as Savage. And then we go back to McMahon, Lord Alfred and Susan with some awful small talk as they fade the credits over stills from the pay-per-view. But it is pretty awesome that they have that Hulk, Hulk song by John Steinman. So let's have a quick roundup of the pay-per-view. Okay, so we get the vital statistics of the pay-per-view. The Wrestling Classic, it's from November 7, 1985. From the Rosemont Arena in Rosemont, Illinois. It drew 14,000 fans, of which 12,000 paid, and it drew 50,000 pay-per-view buys. Overall, this was a thoroughly forgettable pay-per-view. There's a lot of quick matches, even though it's impressive seeing how many people can get out of jobbing cleanly, which was a problem in the 80s. Even the main events had fuck finishes. And that marked the last time in a few years that WWF would promote sweepstakes as a reason to watch a pay-per-view. Bringing to mind, if you jump forward 12 years to SummerSlam 97, there was a $1 million draw in a casket, and pretty much exactly 10 years after that, there was Mr. McMahon's $1 million giveaway. So I guess we're not due another pointless giveaway gimmick until 2017. Coming out of the pay-per-view, there were pushes for JYD, which never translated into gold, Randy Savage, who got a major slow-burning heel push to the top, Ricky Steamboat as well, who'd steal the show with Savage at WrestleMania 3, and the Bulldogs, who'd see tag championship gold in the following year. So that was the Wrestling Classic. I'd urge you not to fish out a rare copy, you're not missing out, but it's a mundane event, but historically quite significant. Well, that about wraps it up for this episode, so stay tuned after the break for our one-man gauntlet. Alright, since the lads aren't around, I'll just discuss a quick topic. Now Macho Man was last seen in the WWF in November 1994. He is a two-time WWF champion, and that's winning it during the Hulkamania era, and that's no mean feat. And he's a one-time Intercontinental champion. He won the untelevised 1987 King of the Ring by beating Bundy in the finals. Four-time WCW champion, won many regional titles. He's rivaled Hogan as the biggest draw in wrestling in 88-89. Dave Meltzer of the Wrestling Observer names him as the 15th biggest draw of all time. His match with Steamboat at WrestleMania 3 is legendary and routinely tops year-end awards in the late 80s. So why, until February 2009, did WWE expunge him from its history? Well, only Randy McMahon and a select few others know for sure. It's all hearsay, but all I can say is it must have been something horrific. Because despite, just say, like, Hogan's politics in testifying against McMahon in the steroid scandal of 92, McMahon did business with him again as soon as his WCW guaranteed contract ran out in 2002. Even the wrestling pariah, Jeff Jarrett, who hoodwinked McMahon out of $250,000 and set up a rival wrestling company, he's been mentioned on DVDs, albeit in a less than flattering sense. Macho Madness runs only because in 2008, A shareholder demanded to know why such a big star hadn't a DVD made of his career, and Vince relented silently and made the DVD, albeit without a documentary or any input from Savage. That sold well, and then came a Macho Man action figure and prominent inclusion in 2011's WWE All-Stars game, which saw Savage himself promoting the game. It's the first time Savage has been in a WWF game since 1994's WWF Raw. I don't know why he left, but all I know is that Macho Man's back, and apparently time heals even the deepest of wounds, and it mends the most burnt bridges, and now there's a chance that Randy Savage can be inducted in the Hall of Fame. He deserves his talent and massive contribution to the industry to be recognised in the most visible stage in the wrestling world. So, yeah, Randy Savage for the Hall of Fame. Do the thing! Alright, tune in next time for WrestleMania 3. This is OSW Reviews and Jay Hunter signing out. Hey everyone, Jay here from OSW Review with a tribute video for the wrestling legend Macho Man Randy Savage. It's hard to describe the magnitude of this man's impact on pro wrestling. He was one of the three wrestling icons to leave an indelible mark on the mainstream. It was always Hogan, Savage, and Warrior. And Savage was the only one who had it all. Amazing wrestling skills and unique, immensely entertaining promos. Savage was a huge part of my childhood, as my mom and my brothers would sit together and watch him on Superstars and Wrestling Challenge in the late 80s, and again as an adult. Whenever I throw on a videotape from a bygone era, I see him in a different light, but he's still just as awesome and makes me mark out and feel like a kid again. It's heartwarming to see the celebration of this legend's career, from the World Wide Web and all the way to Irish newspapers. Rest in peace, Macho.
King, you see, victory! The Macho King Randy Savage is the one person that nobody should bet against, because you all go broke, yeah.
Ooh, yeah, dig it, yeah.
I am the type of person that doesn't talk negative. I stay positive. Lex Luger, we got a date with destiny right now, yeah. And that's the Survivor Series.
the Ultimate Warrior and the Macho Man and the Ultimate Maniac will survive.
Hey, Freak Show, you're going nowhere. I got you for 3 minutes. 3 minutes of tea time.
Elizabeth with her arms outstretched.
Me great, great pleasure to have right here in my body shop the new Intercontinental Heavyweight Champion, Randy Macho Man Savage. I love it, Randy.
Beautiful baby Jesse the Body Ventura. Everybody welcome the new Intercontinental Heavyweight Champion of the world. And this is real bad news for Hulk Hogan, yeah, because this is my passport to the world title. And Tito Santana, too bad, baby.
You know, Macho, let's let him in on the plan. We knew that if it wouldn't be you, it would be me. One of us was going to tack Tito to the wall. Macho Man, I'm so happy and so proud for you. We finally got a champion that all the kids can look up to.
Yeah, absolutely total control right there. Watch this. Yeah. Elizabeth, stare into the video scope right now and tell them who the new Intercontinental the champion of the world
is. Oh, well, you are Macho Man.
Oh, yeah. Now, I'm going to let you hold the belt. What a thrill. Ain't that something? Change my mind, Jesse the Body.
Get out of here. Hey, that's a champion's prerogative, Macho Man.
Champion's prerogative. And I just exercised that option. And Tito Santana, I want you to take a look at this. Because this belt never meant so much as it does right now. And any crying or any excuses is just sour grapes.
Hello and welcome to OSW Review, the old school wrestling video podcast, chronicling the entire Hulkamania era of the WWF pay-per-view by pay-per-view, filmed in glorious Grapple Vision. This is your host, Jay Hunter, and today we'll be reviewing the showdown between WWF champion Hulk Hogan and King Kong Bundy in a steel cage. This is WrestleMania 2. Okay, before we run down WrestleMania 2, let's recap where we are on the timeline and what happened leading up to the pay-per-view's main events. Last time on OSW Review, we had the Wrestling Classic in November 1985. That same month, we saw the original screwjob, when Wendy Richter got screwed out of the women's title. As the story goes, Wendy Richter was the WWF Ladies Champion, but was yet to resign with the WWF. Vince McMahon decided that they gotta get the belt off her ASAP, so one day, November 25th, Richter shows up for the MSG house show. She sees the fabulous Moolah backstage, which was odd since she wasn't on the call sheet and never showed up for events that she wasn't booked on. Anyway, she gets to the ring and her opponent is the Masked Spider Lady, aka the fabulous Moolah.
Shot now by the champion. Clothesline by Wendy. Down goes the spider. One count. Nope. Spider going. Oh, small package. Nicely executed. Whoa, was that close? What was that?
Spider Lady breaks from the script and pins her to the mat. Even though it was only a one count, the ref counts three, and there you have it, Richter was screwed, and Spider Lady, aka the Fabulous Moolah, is now the women's champion. Wendy's pissed and keeps going after Moolah, tearing her mask off. After the match, Richter left the arena in her gear and got a cab to the airport and left wrestling for good. It stayed that way until WrestleMania 25, when she was broached to be in the Divas Battle Royal, but she was smart enough to decline. They say 25 years heals all wounds, as she was inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame Class of 2010 by Roddy Piper. Fast forward to Saturday night's main event, aired March 1st, 1986, so roughly a month before WrestleMania. It was Bob Orton and Mr. T in a boxing match. Piper gets involved and the two beat down T, leading to a boxing match between Piper and Mr. T at WrestleMania 2. On the same show, Don Morocco faced Hulk Hogan for the WWF title, where Bundy gets involved and injures Hogan. The Hulkster was stretchered out with injured ribs. From then on until WrestleMania 2, Hogan was out of action, keeping up appearances only via training vignettes showing his taped ribs. This will all culminate at WrestleMania 2 with a steel cage match between Hulk Hogan and King Kong Bundy for the WWF title.
WrestleMania 2, what the world has come to.
And WrestleMania 2, ladies and gentlemen, emanated from three different locations. From Los Angeles, from Chicago, and from New York. And moments from now, we will take you to the New York setting.
All right, let's do it to it. Grammar, that is. Let's get WrestleMania 2 underway. All right, welcome to OSW Review. This is the only wrestling video podcast in the world. So yeah, we're number one. How'd you like that?
I love it.
Yeah?
I'm number one.
The greatest video podcast of wrestling in the world today.
By default.
Yeah.
WrestleMania 2, what the world has come to.
Okay, so today we're covering WrestleMania 2. So this is your host, Jay Hunter, and I'm joined here today with Mr. OSC.
Yep.
And Neil.
Hello.
And here comes a new challenger.
Fiona.
All right, lads, what's up?
All right, man, great to have you on board, Steve.
Thanks very much, guys.
Before we start the pay-per-view, I want to mention that one of us hasn't watched the pay-per-view, so see if you can guess which one. Be a prize at the end, look. So we're finally at WrestleMania 2, April 7th, 1986. This is not held traditionally at one arena. This is at three arenas. Part one in the Nassau Coliseum in New York. Part two, Rosemont Horizon in Rosemont in Chicago, Illinois. And part three in the LA Sports Arena in Los Angeles, California. So, yeah, how do you like that? Three arenas, one show. What do you think?
Terrible idea, but obviously they figured it was a terrible idea and didn't do it again. But now, the question is, I assume there is going to be, say, 8-9 matches in each arena.
Televised Men's dark, ones.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Most, I don't see 12 dark matches.
Can you imagine paying, like, $200 for a front row WrestleMania seat, and you go there and you get one-third of a card?
Yeah. It wasn't that bad. They had a television where you could watch the other two-thirds of the pay-per-view.
You couldn't do that at home, obviously.
No. No, not a good idea.
Not a good idea at all.
If you're on the West Coast feed, actually, in the LA Sports Arena, you actually got to see the third part live and then the first two parts after that on tape delay. Oh. What do you think of that?
Riveting stuff.
Okay, so we see the opening video and the fucking picture quality is like the 70s. I'm watching the Silver Vision release, Steve, you did as well, and you guys watched the WWE anthology?
Yeah, I watched the WWE anthology version.
Okay, so we got two Silver Vision, two anthology.
You know what decade you're in with a nice sax solo at the start.
That is right. I have jazz sex music written there, because that is exactly what I thought of. Did anyone notice Vince's awesome velvet smoking jacket?
I did not.
It was wonderful.
I'll have to say that we'll probably have to refer you guys a lot of times, because I remember telling you, oh, it's only a 2-hour pay-per-view, and I looked on the DVD and it's like 1:53. How long was your pay-per-view?
I think it was like just over 3 hours. It was like 3:01, 3:02.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
So I'm missing over an hour of footage. Like, oh, that's awesome.
I was going to say again.
Yeah, so when I throw between matches, like, I can tell because, like, they're hard cuts, hard cuts, hard cuts. Every time I go to a new match, the bell rings, bang, the ring bells for the next match. Like,
yeah.
So I must be missing something out here. Like,
you'd be shocked. Well, surprisingly little. during the intro of the whole show, Mean Gene was on the microphone and he said, "Welcome folks to WrestleMania 2. You can cut the electricity with a knife."
Yeah.
And I immediately said, "I'm gonna kill you."
That's right.
That's not smart, like.
Yeah. What's interesting, the prelude actually to the match, you know, they're having already some major sound problems, because even Ray Charles basically is brought in to sing America.
Yeah. He starts singing.
Really? He didn't seem so far.
Sing America, he's actually starts singing and you can't hear anything. So automatically you're like, oh my god, we're in for something.
Yeah, it's basically just feedback and static. But they do have the usual WrestleMania American propaganda bullshit video, which, you know, jets flying, soldiers taking
and speaking
shots.
About that is that it goes through, and you know, the classic scenes, you know, and it goes to the White House gets a big pop, and then it shows Martin Luther King, it's showing JFK, and at the end it actually has Hulk Hogan with like glitter and sparks around him, as if like he is the most amazing figure of all figures. Like, so automatically you can see how Vince is, you know, as I said in WrestleMania 1, building this entire franchise around him, that he is the most important icon in America right now.
Yeah,
so
that's not a bad thing.
Yeah, that's how it should be.
Alright,
Orndorff in Morocco with Mr. Fuji is, at the very start, I'm thinking, who are these commentators? Because we hear Vince talking, and then two random men talk about the match, and it's like, oh, you're not commentators. That was Orndorff and Morocco talking.
That's right.
They dubbed over the audio, but not the video promo package, so it's just them talking.
In my version, I think we actually got to see the video, and I just started giving out, saying, why on earth would you show a pre-match promo during a match? It makes no sense. I can't concentrate on either, really, you know?
Who is this Susan that's commentating with Vince McMahon?
Susan Zinkies.
There was a valet in the wrestling classic called Susan. Is she the one that got groped by Lord Alfred Hayes? It turns out later, we could get to see her later, she was a brunette.
She didn't have a clue about wrestling or anything.
So WrestleMania 2 is taking place from three different arenas, New York, Chicago, and LA. And we get three sets of commentators. So the first time around, we get Vince and Susan St. Clair.
See, we both got a promo by Piper. Before
a racist
that,
promo.
Yeah, oh my god, I actually wrote that down. You know, I didn't shave myself like an Indian and paint myself black. We have two terrible promos where literally Mean Gene goes straight over to Mr. T, and he's already halfway through the promo and it cuts over. So he's like halfway through speaking, talking, and you have no idea what's going on. And you can see them struggling with the time, and straight away then they're over to Piper. Mm. So it's completely out of control. Like the whole editing process, they've already lost control of it. So this is even before you're actually getting the Orndorff match. So we had that.
Wow. You know, Silver Vision, they don't have any WWE logos, and I'd assume that they were the same from 1985 or 86. Yeah. So just to get a contrasting look of what they're putting out now and how it was originally released on VHS.
This promo would get them kicked off TV.
Yeah.
It was
it's
shit.
It's the most racist thing you ever heard.
I wouldn't paint myself black.
And I don't go around. I
shave
myself
like
an
Indian. The damn Indians.
Okay, Orndorff Morocco, a match for the ages. Vince says, this is no physique contest. Historically, WWF has always been about physique, so yeah, shut up, like. any thoughts on the match?
First of all, it was shit. It was very short, and it had a very unsatisfactory ending, being the double countout. But just both of these guys were ginormous. Don Morocco looked like he was bulging out of his skin. And I just made the note that if you painted this guy green, he is the real Hulk. Like, he is the image of him. He is.
Yeah.
The lighting was so awful. It was like you can see the ring and these two, and then maybe give it like a draw distance of about 5 feet, and then just blackness. Like, couldn't see the crowd, couldn't see anything, couldn't see the arena.
Okay, so the finish of the match, Orndorff starts off strong until he schmoz outside. So we get the finish of the match, just the bell rings, and we get a double count out.
Boom.
Yep, Vince plays dumb as the crowd chant bullshit, which they didn't dub out.
The same on my version, you can
Brilliant.
Hear the bullshit chants.
There's a few interesting things about even the commentary. Commentary by Susan St. James is absolutely ridiculous.
Oh.
She hardly says anything, and if you actually start counting, all she says is, uh-oh, you know, Fuji. She's like, oh, it looks like Orndorff's using some ancient Chinese moves. I'm pretty sure, you know, Fuji's Japanese.
There was an incomprehensible Mr. T promo. Yeah. I didn't have a clue what he said, but on the good side, he did have a midget beside him. We were left hanging for the MC to get up and announce a double count out. Like, as the Mr. T promo was going on, you can hear the ring announcer in the background.
Yeah. And yet he's announcing it over Mr. T's promo. As you said, you actually don't know what the decision is. You're like, it's just completely muffled, and you're like, well, what was that? So you already had this whole thing about time constraints already, that everything's been rushed, rushed. It's like, come on to the next match, you know. So it's kind of unpleasant to watch. Like, there's no tempo being set already.
It was really bad.
It's very like Reaction, you know, an Impact, where they'll actually talk to RVD backstage and have someone else's theme going on in the background, you know. George Steele versus Macho Man with Miss Elizabeth. So Macho was the IC champion. So Macho actually won it 2 months ago at a live event in Boston, where he beat Santana. It was great. So I had to actually pause it and have a look on YouTube. Well, you got to go to those house shows. George Steele here used to be a heel under Captain Lou, but he turned face in 1984. It was the first WWF pay-per-view appearance for him. Yeah, nice payday. And just Macho Man was fresh in from Memphis, where he had a big feud with Lawler. And now here he is in the WWF in the big time. So, what do you think of the match, Fionn?
I thought it was pretty much a nothing match. I think the two most noticeable points were I thought Liz was really pretty for back in the day.
Yeah.
And Macho Man cut a promo and called himself, and I quote, the Intercontinental Heavyweight Champion of the World. What the fuck is that? Seriously, lads, that's like three different belts in one or something, you know what I mean? Yeah, basically this match, Macho Man ran away for 2 minutes. Macho Man bumped for flowers.
It was great.
I marked out to that. And there was a camera shot of his arse for at least 20 seconds that I was having none of it as his calf was getting bitten.
Here's something we don't see every day. It's some mind games in-ring pre-match. A lot of stalling, jumping outside the ring, pointing, that kind of thing.
Ooh.
And yellow chairs that don't fold. I'm going to hit you with a chair that doesn't fold. How about that?
You got a mattress, though.
That was basically it. Some more chasing. It was terrible. It was absolutely awful. What was this all about?
Yeah, Susan St. Clair has such insightful comments as, come on, George, and he may not be smart, but he has respect for women.
Yeah, that's true.
I fucking bet he doesn't. He's an animal. Of course he doesn't. How do you find the tear eat the turnbuckle spot?
Well, I didn't know that they were full of polystyrene balls, that's for sure. You know, but a bit weird, you know, like that. Yeah, it's a bit of an odd thing to do in the match.
So we get the Valentine JYD finish from WrestleMania 1, where Savage shoots on Steel and gets the penetration pin with legs on the second row, Steve's favourite.
Yeah. Coming after Jay's favourite, where Savage had hit the elbow drop and was about to get the 3-pin, and Vince says, we're going to have a 3 count as he kicks out at 2. What is that?
That's the first instance of that.
WrestleMania, he's introduced as the IC champion to the world stage, and Steel kicks out of his finisher, so that's not good.
Yeah. Alright, so did you get any interviews after the match?
There was an in-ring interview between Big John Studd and some NFL douchebag. This promo was going nowhere. Both guys were falling over their words, and it was pretty much saved by Mean Gene just being such a pro. He had no charisma, he had no nothing, and Big John Studd really wasn't a good enough promo to make it into anything. It was bad.
He calls him classless. Oh, he's a footballer. He's got no class. The wrestler says he has no class.
And the funny thing about it is that, again, because of the audio problems, they're actually announcing something as they're actually cutting the promo. And the footballer, during the middle of the promo, or Big John's, is like right up in his face trying to cut a real promo. In the background, you see Mean Gene panicking because he knows he's running out of time. And the footballer is actually looking away and trying to focus in on actually what they're announcing, so he's not even listening. So it's so obvious that none of this is, like, you know, actually going on. And the whole time you'll see Mean Gene panicking to try and stop them talking so he can get a segment in to go back to the studio, basically.
Okay, so we cut to heel Jake Roberts in his first WrestleMania appearance versus the George Wells, the face. Wells looks so bland I could have sworn he was Virgil.
The Wriggler himself.
Jake Roberts, he was in World Class, feuding with the Von Erichs before moving to Mid-South and then on to the WWF. And George Wells apparently had a great Canadian football career that I refuse to look up.
Well, if it was in the CFL, it couldn't have been that good. Like, yeah. That's like saying that CFL. You play for Pats and you're, you know, a top of the class footballer. Like, you
that's
know,
much less. People won't know that analogy.
Okay, how about Sligo then?
All right. Any notes on match?
Again, I suppose it, again, I don't have to keep going on with the commentary, but this is another one of these matches. Yeah. George, blah blah blah, and a lot of. Show some nice moves before finishing him off. Direct quote from Susan there.
That was a mess of a match. Absolute mess. We saw a jumping head scissors by Wells. We don't see it that much these days until Mystico, actually. He's breaking it out. So we're returning to jumping head scissors.
Yeah, actually, I had a note about that. Actually, a nice head scissors.
There was one laughable leapfrog spot by Roberts where he looked like something out of Tough Enough. He looked like he nearly... like necked himself coming off it, and Wells, like the other men of the darker complexion, had a hard head like many spots in WrestleMania 1 as Vince likes to overbook with his foreigners and the headbutt spot.
Very much
holy
so.
Crap, like,
all right, just move on to the finish where Jake hits the that's the maneuver, the aka they didn't call it the DDT, must have not been called that yet, which Wells takes a back bump. Thanks very much.
Yep. Wow.
Float over, sexy pin by Jake Roberts into another, and gets the three in another nothing match. So this is jobber squash match. I actually swear Susan actually hisses when she sees the snake, though.
There's a hiss. I think it was her, actually.
Triple H doing his pose in the background somewhere, was he?
Jake wraps the snake around the throat of Wells as the commentators sell it, and Wells actually frots up the neck.
I actually thought that Wells sold the snake really well.
He did, yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was the best part of the match, like, was the after-match antics. Yeah. Fantastic.
And then commentary from Vince, Jake the snake, it was the first time you hear this, continues his undefeated streak.
That's correct. He's 1-0.
So you heard it there first and last.
Him and Michael Cole, like,
just another gem from Susan here. He puts the snake and wraps it around George Wells' neck there. I just hope if Jake ever loses, somebody does this to him. This is really. That's it, man.
Insightful, I think she was looking for, wasn't it?
Is there any pre-match
interviews? We got Jesse and Hogan in LA, yeah.
I have, there was a Roddy Piper and Mr. T promo. Mm-hmm. It was like a face-to-face one, and it's the first thing I noticed. I just couldn't unsee it. Mr. T wearing big, dirty GA shorts. They were like horrible red ball stranglers on him. They were horrendous. And, he cut a bad promo. Then Bob Orton interferes, says nothing of note. And then one other thing I noticed is that Roddy Piper, like Cody Rhodes, doesn't wear knee pads. Just random factoid. And they don't make him look as skinny as Cody Rhodes does either.
Mm. So Mr. T versus Piper. Is that when you're giving out about Mr. T, was that the one where he has his mate who's rubbing him hard from the back, like?
Yeah. The storyline was he had basically a small guy that actually Roddy shaved his hair apparently, and but then he's actually got Smoking Joe Frazier, you know.
Yeah.
So,
again, you know, just a kind of a comment in is like, what's the point of this match? Like, it's boxing, so are they still trying to live off the Rocky franchise? Where if you actually think about what Mr. T's doing at the moment, he would be in his penultimate season of the A-Team. So I'm wondering, is this some way of, you know, kind of, you know, ensuring his kind of future popularity, or trying to work out just what the point of this match is, because Mr. T has no boxing background apart from Rocky. He's actually an amateur wrestling background. So it's interesting that Vince is continuing to promote this kind of whole boxing angle. So it's really Roddy Piper versus Clubber Lang, really, is what we're seeing here.
That's pretty awesome, actually. They should have just promoted it.
Yeah,
that, exactly. Yeah, it would have been much better.
Yeah. So we get 10 rounds of boxing. Oh, jeez.
Oh, yeah.
3-minute rounds.
At this point, it kind of hit me like a smack in the face that not one wrestler had entrance music.
Mm-hmm. Did you get entrances, did you?
We got to see most of the entrances, and I'm pretty sure Hogan was the only one to have any music at all. Mr. T came out with his midget and Joe Frazier, and they were doing the Gracie train,
which is when they all walk out with their arms on their shoulders. And the Gracie family said that they invented that in 1993. So they're full of shit.
Were they in place? Yeah. Bit of red light, green light.
Had Joan Rivers coming out to basically introduce the whole match. And what's interesting is she actually had to read from cards. You know, it was so hard to remember a couple of names. I just thought, like, you know, look, she is a stand-up comedian. How could she not remember these people? And, you know, she goes through and introduces all the special guest judges, and, you know, you have Cap Calloway, you know, Chief Gordon Liddy, you know, Herb the Timekeeper. Like, who cares? Like, you know, why are we even watching this piece of crap match? It took 13 minutes of our time, you know.
Round one, it didn't look too bad at all. You could almost believe it was a shoot. So both just trade shots.
Yeah.
You know, both are poor boxers, but it looks real.
I actually felt pretty much the same, that they did a good job of making it look like they hate, that they hated each other and like they were really boxing.
Okay, so round two, Piper knocks down T twice and attacks T in his corner afterwards, and Susan drops a, why would he do that? He's already winning. He's a fucking heel. That's
Did you notice that between round one and round two, the referee got in Piper's face about putting too much Vaseline on?
That's so right.
Vaseline gate. I thought that was really, really cool. Since, you know, since there's been a lot of this in UFC since.
Oh yeah.
About fighters complaining about other fighters putting on too much Vaseline and baby oil.
Is that just if you punch them, it'll
slip?
Yeah, slip
punch slips.
Why don't they just have a rule with no Vaseline at all?
Because you have to have Vaseline because it cuts down on cuts. Yeah. How ironic.
So round three, T knocks down Piper twice, including Piper falling out of the ring. All right, this probably doesn't happen in boxing ever, does it? Would that be the end of a match?
But even knocking the gum shield out, they never would let that go ahead.
Yeah.
Like, he would have to put it back in. Yeah. You know? And they just literally, it's funny, you see the ref picked it up and just thrown it. Like,
Oh, just before round four, Piper throws a tiny chair at T. That was great. And round four, so both men have their hands down, they both slug it out, and they're both gassed. And throw, obviously.
Oh, Mr. T gassed in round two, Jay.
Oh, yeah.
Really badly.
Like, every round got progressively worse, and, like, kayfabe was being shattered a little bit, but by round four, it was obvious that both men were just throwing work punches, and they missed by a mile, but they'd sell it anyway, so it turned out to be a pile of shite.
Bit of a hat bump.
Finish of the match was Piper pushes the ref down and slams Mr. T, but the ref sees it, gets DQ'd, and they have a big brawl. So.
And one thing I did notice is that Vince actually commentates better as a boxing commentator than he does as a wrestling commentator.
I think he's a big boxing fan.
Yeah, he was actually able to call every single move, southpaw, jab, you know, anything you could think of. He actually didn't make one mistake, you know. I can't say the same, obviously.
Vince's grandfather, Vince McMahon Sr., he was a boxing promoter.
Overall, other than the really bad finish, I thought this was a pretty good match. I thought that they made it look believable. It was entertaining. The ring girl before round four had an awesome arse.
Yeah. I didn't get to see that.
We actually missed that too, and Vince does make a comment that, you know, we actually finally got to see the ring, you know, girl. So obviously they had made some mistakes there. He actually admits himself in the commentary that they just couldn't get in the camera work.
From watching it and seeing how badly Mr. T gassed out, and, you know, his kind of gimmick was that he's a real tough guy, hard man. From watching this, if this was a real fight, right, Piper would murder him. He would have shot on him and destroyed him. Like,
something that he started off with that made you think, is that he did these like really fast punches.
Body punches. Yeah.
And, you know, The Undertaker used to do that as well.
Yeah,
as I headed it, but it looks like shit.
Yeah.
So that wraps up the New York portion of the show. So we got a double count out. Savage stealing the pin. No, anyone? He steals the pin? Fuck's sake. Really. Jake Roberts wins in a nothing match. And we get a DQ Schmoz in an awful work. A boxing match. Oh, so poor New York. All right, let's move on to the Chicago portion in Rosemont Horizon in Illinois.
We go to the commentators for the Los Angeles section, and there is another lady commentating, and she says in her first line of the whole show, she admits this is her first time to ever watch wrestling. What the fuck?
So this is the right time to start WrestleMania.
And again, you know, you're in the 80s again when you're wearing you know, a chrome jumpsuit. So that's...
Can't touch this.
Buck Rogers called and he wants his clothes back. So that's Kathy Lee Crosby. Have no idea who she is.
Commentators for tonight: Gorilla Monsoon, thank God. Kathy Lee Crosby, who?
That's her name.
And Mean Gene. So that's pretty cool. We don't really hear him on commentary. Mm-hmm. As previously mentioned, Spider Lady Moolah had the belt since screwing Richter out of it in the original Screwjob back in November.
Velvet McIntyre was introduced as being from Cork.
From Cork? She's from Cork?
Yeah. Are you serious?
The lovely
Irish lass.
That's one of the reasons I kind of perked up. Was like, no, what's this about? And then, oh, it's awesome.
Velvet McIntyre is wearing swimming togs that look like a nighty. And I thought that was kind of hot. She's not wearing...
Did you also think her mullet was hot?
In 1985.
And being barefoot, like...
Yeah, she's barefoot. Something tells me she's not a shoot fighter. No. So, any thoughts about this 53-second match?
I can give you my very first thought. It went, ding, ding, ding. Oh, God, here we go. I thought that it was actually better than what I thought it was going to be, in a sense that it wasn't botch followed by botch. I thought that Moolah did a couple of nice snapmares.
You did.
But unfortunately, she did about 12 of them, and by the time you got to 4 or 5, it kind of lost its impact. Velvet McIntyre got the heat and her comeback and lost via pin in less than a minute. Like, you know, this is WrestleMania. This is meant to be the big show of the year, and I don't know, it didn't really come across as much.
There is an awkward finish as McIntyre misses the big splash, and it was good work from the cameraman, bit of booby there.
And
Moolah has a chat / pins her for the win in under a minute. Not all doom and gloom. McIntyre would hold the Ladies' Championship for a 6-day stint while WWF toured Australia later in the year.
Oh,
so there you go.
There we go. So, Sheamus is not the first ever Irish-born champion.
No?
What do you think of that? Go. Yeah.
It was Maureen McCreevy. Her foot was on the ropes or something, because they kind of zoomed in for the 2 and 3, and I was like, because she had her foot on the ropes on 1. So,
maybe it was a bit
of a Chicago screw job.
Oh, God. Yeah. Is that Moolah's gimmick? Like, every month she just, like, politics and wins the belt? Like,
yeah.
Wow. Politics, screw job, botch.
The trifecta, like.
Okay, so next we got a flag match. Nikolai Volkoff with Freddie Blassie versus Corporal Kirshner representing the USA. So, first thing I noted was, ah, fuck, Kathy Lee's staying on commentary. To be fair, she's no Susan St. Clair. You know, she's actually better. So, what are the chances the non-American will win this match at WrestleMania?
Classic heat, you know, sing the national anthem.
I love that gimmick, lads. Yeah. I think
it gets
great.
Over.
Classic
right,
heat, yeah.
Next time they've got a French wrestler, they have to give them that gimmick. I love the French national anthem. I think it's awesome.
They could call them the Demi Baguettes. Did you like Volkov's tights? They're almost up to his armpits. It was amazing.
Wearing the granties, like.
Volkov bites Kirshner in the forehead and is busted open from it. In the ring, then flails his arm and the ref takes a bump. Blassie throws in the cane, but it's intercepted by Kirshner, who uses it and then gets the 3 count. Hang on, no time for a Rock Shamrock Series 98 reference, where it's the exact same finish, but there was a pinfall in a flag match.
Isn't that always how a flag match goes? You've got to win to put your flag, or do you win by putting your flag?
My first flag match was in 97, and it was, Bret Hart Patriot, and they had them on a pole, and it's like, whoever gets on the pole and takes down the flag, you get to wave the flag and maybe the national anthem or whatever. Mm. So, yeah, pinfall here, and surely both of them came out with their flags, so you can have the flag whenever you want it, you know?
That's it.
I thought this match was a complete waste of time. Corporal Kirshner was ripped as well. He was a big roid monkey as well. This 20-man battle royal, guys, this was money.
So we got another wrestler versus other sport match with whoever will show up in Chicago. So, OC, your favourite, the special guest timekeeper.
Yeah. Who have we got this time, Jack?
Claire Pillar, she found the beef. It was in the stove. She stands up and her mic doesn't work. It would help if you put it up to her mouth. Like,
yeah, baby, don't turn it on.
Special guest ref is Dick Butkus.
What an awesome name, by the way. That's good. It's amazing.
He must have married Gaylord Butkus.
Yeah.
And he's coming into the ring, and no, he stays outside. So, and same with Ed Ali. Too Tall Jones.
That's who I heard.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Ali is the main one.
Refrigerator.
Okay, so contestants in this 20-man Battle Royal Invitational, mind you. Jimbo Covert, Pedro Morales, not yet Saba Simba, Tony Atlas. Ted Arcidi, the world's strongest man.
The state of him. He's tiny. I actually went out of my way to make note on Ted Arcidi, the world's most average man. It's like so what, you take a slightly bigger than average guy and whack a weightlifting belt on him and he's the world's strongest man. Like, no, I'm having none of that.
I'll put him in a feud with David San Martino.
and Dino Bravo. He used to have that gimmick. Yeah,
that's true. Then we have Harvey Martin from Dallas Cowboys. Golden Boy Dan Spivey, who I know looked a lot like Austin did in WCW, and one of your favorites. He went on to be the much unknown but fucking awesome gimmick, Waylon Mercy. Yeah.
How long does that last? Like 2 months? Amazing vignettes.
I have no memory of that.
It's amazing. Like, he kind of looks like a thin haired Paul Heyman at this point, but no, it's a great gimmick. He is a southern gentleman, but he's a vicious heel, so he'd talk politely to you and low, and then he'd murder you, like so.
Like the guy in The Simpsons with the glove smack, like.
not even close.
I challenge you to a duel, Spivey.
You're dressed in all white as well.
See, I told you I was close.
Hillbilly Jim,
who was huge still, ripped.
King Tonga, aka Haku. The Iron Sheik, Ernie Holmes from the Pittsburgh Steelers, the Killer Bees, Brian B. Blair, and Jumpin' Jim from
I love that. I wonder what they are.
Is there any wrestler that's gotten over by being called Jumpin'? Like,
your boy
Jumpin' Jeff Farmer.
That's the one.
Yep.
Big John Studd, Bill Frelick, from the Atlanta Falcons, Russ Francis from the San Francisco 49ers, Bruno Sammartino, and William Perry, Refrigerator himself, the Hart Foundation, Bret Hart, and Jim the Anvil Neidhart. Fuck me, they weren't wearing pink. They were still in blue.
What's that all about? Blue and black? Like,
it's weird to see, isn't it?
And did you ever hear the story about that? Where he'd go to the costume department in WWE and it said, like, what have you got for me? And she'd be like, oh, I got this hot pink. And he's like, no, that's all right. And so come back a few months later, he'd be bored with his blue or his red or whatever. And like, what have you got for me? Oh, I've got this hot pink. I was like, no. So he comes back a couple of months later. And, what have you got for me? Oh, I got this hot pink. He's like, yeah, all right.
You never did your new stock.
Like, that's amazing.
So you can thank costume designers in WWE for the pink and black.
Did you say WWE or TK Maxx?
So just finish that off. Andre the Giant coming out last. How did you like his Hulk Hogan attire?
Oh, the aura's Jamaican me crazy. Like. He looked awful.
Actually, Dan Spivey actually had the full Hulkamania gear and the silken blonde hair of a Chinese man.
Because there's loads of blonde Chinese.
Yeah, there is.
It's amazing.
Triple H would have none of that. Imagine, like, Hulk Hogan, if he was in Chicago, he'd be like, oh, this guy's just wearing his outfit, you know, in a different size. Like, but I've got the hair, I've got the tights, and so does Andre. You know, anyway.
I just like, hey, brother, I'm going to take the night off. He's going to fill in for me.
All right, I noticed that the special guest and entrances, the only real entrance I got to see besides Hogan, lasted 7 minutes, and the Battle Royal was 9 minutes, so... any thoughts on the match at all?
It was alright. The fans were into it. It was, you know, outside of Hogan, definitely got some of the biggest pops of the night. Someone at some point made the comment that there was a combined 5,612 pounds in this match.
Did you do the maths?
I did not.
I actually did do the maths, and it works out as 280 pounds each.
That sounds about right.
Like, you might think it's a bit off, but Andre's in there, so he'd add.
And William Perry.
I thought it was pretty hard to call this match because they all just brawl until you get down to six people, you know? There's no story at all. Refrigerator Perry here, he looks like he has a massive wedgie. What was he wearing?
He's wearing like a fucking bathing suit. Like it's like something out of Baywatch. Like, you know, he's like the red onesie. What is up with that? Once I saw it, I couldn't unsee it. It was all I could see for the rest of the match. Like,
but like he wasn't wearing his size.
He's seen the dark side of the moon for 9 minutes. That was bad. Did you know that Barry Windham looks like a cross between Hulk Hogan and Randy Quaid from Kingpin? He looks
Barry Windham.
You mean
Dan
Spivey?
Yeah, yeah. No, Barry Windham, wasn't it? Barry the big Windham tall blonde fella with
that's Dan Spivey.
Oh, that's Dan. He's the image of Barry Windham. Mm. Holy shit.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so Andre looked to be very immobile, actually. Stood dumb said Bruno with no fanfare at all. Then to the final six, which was Stud Andre, Hard Foundation, Refrigerator Perry, and some bloke. Perry rolls through a double hip toss by the Hard Foundation and retaliates by missing like a double push, but the crowd popped huge for it. It was his big spot.
Perry was over Hugh. He was a megastar on the show. Mm. Yeah, big time. His one-on-one with Big John Stud was one of the loudest pops of the whole night. Like,
Stud hip tosses Perry over the top rope. Perry asked to shake his hand, but he stood out.
God, you retard, Big John Stud. Like, come on.
It's a face. Surely you can trust the face. Monsoon, just as like down to the final four here, Monsoon tells us that Andre always wins battle royals. Thanks. Fucking.
But whose side is he on? Why would you book Big John Studd to be like the huge giant in the match when you've got a huger giant across the ring? Like, booking sense would it like have Big John Studd against William Perry as the last two, you know, and have Perry go over or something? But obviously Andre couldn't go over the top rope or something because he could barely move. But I just thought it made no sense.
Yeah, definitely.
It kind of annoyed me a bit, actually.
So the guys, they bump really hard for Andre, like selling chops to the chest, like punches to the face, and they run to the ropes while Andre stays there and, you know, he boots them in the shin, that kind of thing. Anvil supersells a boot to the midsection at best and jumps over the top rope. He's like a headless chicken.
Yeah. He bounced off the ropes and took a kick to the gut and then did like a 360. He twirled and moved in towards the center of the ring, and then it's like he realized where he was and then he spun towards the ropes and jumped over. It was amazing.
So Andre press slams, that's being generous, Brett onto Anvil to the outside and wins the match.
Then walks out to zero heat. The fans couldn't care less.
Yeah.
Because Perry was out.
Let's main event him.
Two more segments. Piper cut a great promo.
I didn't understand, obviously. If I wanted to come for a picnic tea, I would have packed the lunch. I come to fight, and just as I'm getting into the fighting, you have all, you know, you and Perry obviously come from the same mold because you both cheat. I saw Perry pulling John Studd over like that. I saw T rubbing his head, rubbing them gnarly bristles inside my eyes, but nothing he could do could hurt me. There's nothing I said. If he can knock me out, I will retire. I have fight after fight after fight left, and I don't have to cut my hair like an Indian, and I don't have to dye myself black. And I saw you coming in with Joe Frazier in a nice little kilt. Joe Frazier, I never seen you look better in your entire life the waist down.
Susan, a comment, please.
Well, I don't know, Roddy. That sounds like a bunch of blarney to me.
I'm not the handsomest thing you
ever.
All right, here we go back with a replay. You take a look at for yourself. And here you will see you blatantly pushing the referee. Obviously, you felt at this juncture that you were losing the matchup. You were losing the fight. Look at this. A blatant shove of the referee.
I wasn't losing nothing. He kept sticking his nose in my business. I come to fight T. I end up having to fight the entire Nassau. He didn't look too sharp there, did he? I like the way he drops on his head. It's too bad I dropped him on his head, because dropping him on his head really doesn't do a lot of damage. That's why Duva had me going mostly for the body. Did you notice the way I was stepping on his tongue as I was boxing him, causing me to slip all over the place? Did you notice the way that there was nothing left to tee, how they were holding him and carrying him out, and the big tear in his eye?
The irascible Roddy Piper. Let's take you now, ladies and gentlemen, back to Chicago and Mean Gene Okerlund.
Just banging
on. Is this the third?
Yeah, yeah.
So he hasn't even showered or anything. He's literally back up with
it was
Vince.
Fantastic.
And he is just going at it because he had to basically say why he isn't going to quit now, because, you know, even though, you know, he didn't really lose the match, and yeah, he had to do a bit of that. But yeah,
he sounded very Canadian. How anyone could ever think he was from Aberdeen or wherever he was is ridiculous. But he went back to his racist comment about painting himself black.
He did.
And then just as the camera swapped over to New York or something, or back to the match, you could hear for like a split second him making a monkey noise. I swear to God, it was, you know, like, you know, he's just, oh yeah, and I don't need to paint myself black. And he went, and then it was just cut. It was cut. I swear. I hope I'm not going mental, yeah, but that's what it sounded like to me.
Because on the Saturday night's main event before the pay-per-view, there was a bit where it was Cowboy Bob Orton, your boy Ace, and Piper beating up Mr. T, and Orton would hold Mr. T down, and Piper got his belt instead of whipping him. So whipping the black guy with a belt, and they got into a lot of trouble over it.
Whipping someone is one, you know, but like making racial slurs while you're doing it is...
Yeah,
like,
yeah. Yeah.
Then again, though, you know, if he's been making as many racist comments in the build-up to Mania as he had during the show, then fair enough.
Like, maybe it is the 70s. Racism was alive and well in the 70s. Oh, though. Yeah. There's probably still a bit of a holdover, you know?
Until the mid-90s in Ireland. There was one more promo before we went to the main event. It was Mean Gene cutting a promo with some gormless NFL goon who said nothing.
Yeah.
And then Sheik cut a promo. Oh. Couldn't hear a word he was saying, but he was awesome, and he called them Gene Mean.
Gene Mean, we should prove it to all America. Wrestler is better than football player. I wish my partner Nicola was over. For sure, we're going to win the Battle Royale. Look at me, cameraman.
Thank you very much, Iron Sheik. Jimbo Colbert from the Chicago Bears.
Iran, number one, Russia.
Back to Gorilla Monsoon.
Yes,
which is great.
Yeah.
He's so awesome.
He's
like
the Scott Steiner of his day.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great point.
Imagine a debate between those.
About numbers. Do you remember that one on TNA? Like, amazing.
Yeah, again in that promo, yeah, that you can see they're very stuck for time because, I mean, Gene kept trying to wrap it up, and yeah, the Sheik was in, yeah, and, like, you know, doing his poses.
That's actually right, because Sheik was just about to go into a tangent about Hulk Hogan, and Mean Gene just grabbed the mic away from him, and they cut, like.
Brilliant. Okay, so main event in Chicago, we got the WWF tag title match, the Dream Team, Beefcake and Valentine, as champion, versus the Bulldogs, and I thought it was a pretty good match, actually.
Yeah.
First thing, how can there be a dream team if Dusty's not in there?
Mm-hmm.
And what about Beefcake and Valentine is so desirable?
That's a tumbleweed moment by the way. Luscious Johnny Valiant. I took one look at him and all I could see was Michael Flatley. I just bit of this, like, the state of him.
Did you like his kind of blonde poodle thing going on?
He looked awesome. I'm sure he's a great heel, but it's just once I saw the Lord of the Dance, that was all I could see. Like,
Ozzy Osbourne with bleached blonde hair and a pink suit.
Yeah,
peach suit.
You know more.
I actually wrote that down.
Oakland credits the Bulldog success, the teamwork.
Jay, did you appreciate the Beefcake's jacket? It was a leopard print trench coat.
I didn't see this.
It was awesome.
I would have loved
it. What are you watching?
It was the same as his tights, but just in a trench coat.
That's amazing.
It was awesome.
Yeah.
Straight out of Streets of Rage.
He's a big dude. Like, he is 6'6 or something. He's a tall guy.
Good on you, Ed Leslie. Oakland calls them calls the Bulldogs the Cinderella story of the WWF, noting their success. It's not very manly, is it?
No, it's not. Did you notice that Dynamite looked old by this point? Mm. He looked a bit haggard. Like.
Yeah, definitely.
He really did. Still ripped, though, but looked a bit
old.
He
would have been, what, late 20s, early 30s?
Is that all? Even.
Yeah. He's a young guy. Like.
Holy crap.
He was only in WWF a couple of years. Like. Valentine hits the rarely seen safest tombstone ever with imagine the pile driver, but landing forward on your knees instead of jumping back and landing on your arse. And Bulldog hits the second most countered move in history, the running power slam, but only gets a two.
So what's number one then? Okay, well, in my opinion, number one is the RKO.
Oh yeah? Does that get countered a lot?
Yeah, a lot of pushing.
A lot of pushing away. It has to be just something off the top rope, like a splash off the top rope. You put your knees up or something.
Mm. Actually, the axe handle might be up there.
The axe handle.
No, but I'd say the number one is the Dominator by Farouk. He hit it maybe once.
Well, that's because no one wants to take that bump. That is nasty looking, though.
It's, onto your tummy again. Because he picked them up and everyone would just fly down inside. And so, that's it. Like, you know, there's a very interesting wrist lock into a jackknife atomic drop, if that makes any sense. Like
a wrist lock?
And then he kind of picks them up and then just drops them.
Actually, yes, I made a note about that move saying, why is that move not banned? You can't hit a low blow, but you can hit an atomic drop in wrestling. It makes no sense to me.
I suppose it's
supposed to be on your bum bum, isn't
cheeks.
It?
Yeah, maybe.
Really?
I think it's a pelvis thing rather than a groin thing.
Okay. Fair enough. Dynamite at some point hit an absolutely beautiful snap suplex. Yeah. It was like Benoit-esque, obviously, because Benoit loved him. But it was beautiful.
And just noted, the storyline of the match is the heel veterans, and are in general, they're in control of the rookie faces.
Valentine was in control. Ed Leslie must have been green as grass. He did nothing in this match. I think he came in for like probably added up about a minute max. Like Valentine did all of the work in this match. Like,
Any other notes on this match?
So yeah, it's actually my favourite match the whole pay-per-view. Is fast paced, lots is going on. As if you compare this 13 minutes to the Mr. T Piper, you know, it much better in terms of like, you know, what you're getting for your time.
So this is like 8th match on the card and it's the first good one.
It is.
You really do appreciate it.
Was the finish of this match booked? Because it seemed like a bit of a schmoz. I think it was Bulldog Irish whipped Valentine into Dynamite and they clashed heads and pinned them because of that. Like, I suppose, you know, Dynamite, it would have worked if Bulldog's partner was black.
Bulldog gets the 3 and the belts. That's the second time tag belts have changed hands at WrestleMania.
I'm sure Dynamite wasn't happy with Davey getting the pin because he pretty much despises the guy. Even at the time.
Just after the match, Captain Lou Albano and Ozzy Osbourne say a few words, and just I wonder how much Ozzy got paid. He did nothing. He added nothing, and he said about 3 words.
And there's a part of it that where, you know, Cathy Lee goes into the ring. I was like, what are you doing in there? Like, she's like the only basic commentator. She goes down and she's interviewing Ozzy Osbourne. And are you going to do this? Are you going to follow them around? Is this your new career?
And he just goes,
yeah. He doesn't know what is going on.
Absolutely. So you, Ozzy, you're going to come back in their corner. This is going to be a future for you. You heard it first then.
Cut from the California portion of the show onto the final hurdle, the LA Sports Arena in LA in California.
That would be right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the commentary team was Lord Alfred Hayes, Jesse Ventura, and Elvira.
Tits!
A.K.A. Bubarella.
Bubarella, I like it. She was really hot.
While they're talking, someone or something gets massive heat from the crowd, and we see in the ring, it's Hercules. And nice outfit, man.
Yeah,
pretty cool. Yeah. Straight out of Rome. So we got Ricky Steamboat versus Hercules Hernandez. Well, I thought it was a great match. So any thoughts on the show?
Light streaking. There's a huge space between the ring and the actual crowd. The actual cameras they're using and the lighting is really terrible. So even for you to start the match, when moves are done, there's actually the light is streaking across the video. So the production quality of it is absolutely terrible. It's actually very hard to actually see some of the moves. But again, it starts off really good, you know.
Yeah, definitely lots of leapfrogs.
Yeah.
Hercules Hernandez, is he Mexican?
He looks Irish.
Yeah.
Strapping ginger lad. Yeah. Like.
Definitely not Mexican. Like,
no, not at all.
So it was a fast-paced match. Thank you, Dragon. There's a noticeable drop in audio quality from the commentator. It was like they only had 2 headsets and like Jesse Ventura just had to get an Elvira's grill to talk.
Yeah,
you know?
By design, I'd imagine.
All right, we'll switch it. You have to team up with Alfred Hayes.
Yeah.
Get a smooch. The commentators quizzically asked each other about Steamer's red knee ribbon.
I think one of them says, it's a whip. I actually think they say, yeah, it's like, as he's running past them, it whips them. I don't know. It made no sense.
big elbow from Hercules and an elbow drop twice, and his own Jericho, come on, baby!
Yeah, that's awesome,
yeah.
He only got a two. I thought he looked quite like Bruiser Brody. This guy with Hoss, Warlord? No, Barbarian.
Barbarian.
Yeah.
Hoss guy, yeah.
Oh yeah, he did go Hoss.
Yeah, nice heel face divide with the white trunks versus black trunks. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, I love that. Just, you know, it's so obvious who's a face and who's heel. Steamboat is an awesome baby face.
Yeah.
The crowd were behind everything he did. Just little things like doing a leapfrog. He just makes it look so good. There was a double leapfrog spot and then a backward elbow that he did to Hernandez that looked really awesome. Mm. The greatest move of all time in this match, the Americana, was put on for a good minute.
The finish of the match was Steamer turning the tide and getting a too high crossbody on Hercules 4-3. And I noted, more of this pace, please. Very pleasant to watch.
Yeah.
Thank you, Ricky Steamboat. That was great.
And Jesse Ventura was great in this match. Yeah. He played a great deal. Yeah.
So moving on, we got WrestleCrack presents adorable Adrian Adonis versus Uncle Elmer. What the fuck? What is this comedy indie shit doing at WrestleMania?
Yeah, because when I saw Jimmy Hart, you know, I actually just went to the bathroom.
Did you have memory of Uncle Elmer?
No,
because I didn't. I was not expecting him to look like he looked. Because I heard Uncle Elmer, and I immediately thought of like Uncle Ben. Like, that was gonna be
stir fry.
How's your rice?
I was thinking of Adam's family, the Uncle Festus.
Fester.
Adonis. Is,
the state of him.
Yeah.
What's that? What's his gimmick all about?
He was dressed like he's in a Wayne Brothers film. It's like Big Mama here. yeah, he's got some horrible drag makeup on, so I wasn't impressed.
No.
This was a sloppy, slow punch-kick match. Hayes has the second big telegraph of the night. Big splash coming! I'm afraid this is the end for Adonis! And Elmer misses. So, any points on the match before we move on?
Adrian Adonis kicked off the match by botching Ric Flair's turnbuckle spot. I was like, what a start! He can't go over the rope, and it's just, it was downhill from there. The match was shit. All this match is missing is midgets and sock puppets. Fuck.
Oh, God. So the finish is Adonis hits the top rope, jumping splash punch, which Hayes calls as a kind of a headbutt. Got the job done, didn't it? Thank God it's a quick match, and fuck it, that's the end of that. Like, they got any interviews post-match?
Yeah, before we went to the next match, we had a promo with Lord Alfred Hayes and Hulk Hogan. Hulk Hogan had his bandana on his head at a silent angle, it looked like an eye patch.
And it looked like it was kind of cutting off the circulation, because the stuff he was saying didn't make any sense.
It was amazing. And I actually made the note that I couldn't concentrate on what Hogan was saying due to Hayes' shifty eyes. Like, he had the mic up to Hogan and he just kept on looking to the side constantly. I couldn't concentrate on anything.
But there's a weird thing about this bandana, like, because even like he's sucking on it when he comes out to the ring as well. So it's a bit he kind of self-medicating with it.
It was amazing. Hayes actually cuts off Hogan to end the promo.
Well,
I was shocked. I reckon there was so reprehension over that.
Cool. All right, so next match we got the Funks, which is Terry Funk and Dory Funk Jr., aka Hoss Funk.
Was that actually Dory Funk Jr.?
Yeah, that's it.
Because I watched the match, it was like Slamboree 93. And so it's like, what, like 8 years later?
Yeah.
And he had long hair when he wrestled Nick Bockwinkel. Yeah. In an awesome match, by the way.
Who? Well, it says Dory Funk Jr. on the DVD case.
Oh, so okay, must
hopefully
be. Hoss, what's that all about?
Yeah. Maybe
Hoss.
Yeah. I think maybe it's like horse, you know, calling someone horse.
Oh, it is, yeah.
Like, is it?
Oh, like, okay. He's a horse, like, so he's a beast, like.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Beast and an animal. Oh, very nice. So the Funks, Terry Funk and Hoss Funk versus JYD and Tito. They're still mates a year down the line, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
So
JYD was over with the fans. He got a large pop.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. And Tito as well. Geez, the fans. Yeah, this is like this baby face that's just, you know, everyone just loves them. Naturally, just likes you.
Yeah.
You know, that's great. He never turned heel, did he? Strikeforce was face as well. I was worried because Ventura says that the Funks hail from Double Cross Ranch.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's a great name.
Anyway, Hayes says, Junkyard Dog has made his mark. Jimmy Hart, who's managing the Punks here, has a tiny keyboard tie and a white
suit. Was great throughout the show. He was great in the last match as well with Adrian Adonis.
Yeah, Terry Funk in the WWF, that's quite odd. You know, he gets pretty dominated in this match. The faces, you know, have the run of the match. And Terry breaks up the count after Tito hits the flying forearm. And then into a crisscross.
Yes, absolutely.
Topped after about 10 seconds when Terry knees Tito in the back. There is a bit where Terry Funk, he can't do a delayed vertical suplex, so they kind of quickly reverse it and Tito gets it. Thankfully, since Elvira is the third man, so to speak, at the commentary booth, she only chimes in when asked. Aventura admonishes Elvira for being impartial towards Santana. I thought it was quite funny. There was a dog spot. You guys see the dog spot where Tito is on all fours and he's trying to scoot past Terry Funk, trying to make the hot tag.
I actually liked that spot. I thought it was really good. I felt that the match dragged when Tito was in the match as opposed to Junkyard Dog. And I really expected it to be the opposite way around, just because of the difference in the work rate. Like,
Funk takes a back body drop to the outside thanks to JYD. It was like, there was no padding outside.
Yeah. Was this 1985, was it?
86.
You know, this was 3 years after Terry Funk's first official retirement.
Wow.
Yeah, holy he's still shit. Going today.
So the finish is when Chico slaps on the figure four to Funk, but the ref says, no, you're not the legal man. And in the confusion, Mate throws the megaphone to Funk, who clocks JYD and gets the three. There's great selling of the leg by Funk, although Tito only had the figure four locked in for about a second. Great selling makes sense, you know.
That's why he's an all-time great.
So we get a promo package for the main event. Take that, WrestleMania 1.
Yeah.
We get taken back to Saturday night's main event where Bundy, with help from Morocco, hits the whole train 3 times. They call it the Avalanche.
The whole train.
And the Big Splash twice, which they also call the
Avalanche Splash.
Oh, right. So I can punch you and we'll call that the Avalanche, and I can kick you and call that the Avalanche, is it?
From Atlantic City, New Jersey, weighing 458 pounds, King Kong Bundy.
That man is awesome. Not just his extraordinary size, the amazing thing about him is his agility.
Bobby the Brain Heenan sparing no expense in putting in his stable some of the finest wrestlers in the world today.
Just let Hogan get into the ring. Let him put the title on the line. We're ready for a shot in right now.
Anywhere, anytime, Hogan.
Hogan would rather, he'd rather stand out front of a supermarket and sign autographs for kids. He'd rather go visit an old age home than get in the ring with anybody in my family. And he knows what would happen. The gold would belong to me.
Hulk Hogan and his title events against the magnificent Morocco.
Coming in now, look at this. Look at that.
The Hulkster has Bobby the Brain up in the air. From behind, there's Bundy. Where did he come from? Right at the Hulkster. Another avalanche.
Oh, the Big Splash.
I've never seen a Hulkster this state before. He looks unconscious.
I bet his ribs are crushed. I mean, there's no telling what's wrong with him. You know he has to have internal injuries as a result of that kind of damage.
This cage is a specially reinforced cage because an ordinary cage would never have stopped somebody like King Kong Bundy.
Well, you know something, Mean Gene? Just because I get sick, brother, I don't get called and tired for the job, man. I have a commitment to all those Hulkamaniacs out there to defend this world title.
I'm 6'6", 468 pounds, and I'm the man that should be the world champion. And April 7th in Los Angeles, Hulk Hogan, what you got on that Saturday night main event in Phoenix is nothing compared to what's going to happen in that steel cage.
And when I felt that pain, man, all it did was drive me on, made me train harder.
In 1986, I said I was going to manage the champion of the world, and you're looking at him right here.
You say you're a giant, and that's what it's going to take to stay with me, brother. You better be a giant, and you better be ready, because I'm coming after you, brother.
Big So it's official, no entrance theme for anyone, except for Hulk Hogan. Only entrances that I got to see were in the Battle Royal.
Did you get to see the promo where Hogan had the weights on him and he was doing all the weights?
And he's a mean genius, isn't he?
That was awesome. I thought it was really great. I thought it made Hogan come across as just a real awesome baby face who's willing to go through the pain, brother. And I just thought it was done really well.
It is quite funny though when he's doing the chin-ups, you know, with the 100 pounds on, because it's so obvious he's actually just kind of standing up, standing down on an actual...
So the main events, we got a cage match for the WWF Championship, King Kong Baby Bundy versus Hulk Hogan, who's champion. Do you think Bundy could scale the cage?
Like, no. I actually think the cage would fall over. As funny enough as they say, how sturdy
that
is.
That counts.
I think he'd fall out of the ring, but I don't think he'd climb over.
Probably, if I was Hogan, I'd probably just let him try scale the cage, then go to the other side and scale it myself.
Yeah.
Be over in a minute.
Yeah.
Job done. Yeah. Elvira breaks out.
Tits.
She says, "I'm glad they're in a cage because Bundy's an animal." It's not how long were you waiting to break that?
Like. Well, she did have some comments about the cage looked like something she had back at her house or something.
Thank God they actually have the escape via the door as well, so Bundy's saved with that one.
Was this the first time they ever used the blue cage?
Yeah, in WWF.
Wow.
And they did have a few comments where they weren't sure, you know, if he could get in the cage for the starters because of the size of him. So then they had, if he got in, obviously he could get back in.
Nothing particularly great, but Hogan and by proxy Bundy were really over. They were like, the crowd loved this match, absolutely ate it up. Bundy blades after being thrown into the cage by Hogan. Hogan repeats the cage bump a few times and the crowd love it. Then Hogan does the I can't slam the big man spot, which is pretty cool. And Hogan, the face, he never goes for the door. That's fucking awesome. That's what a face does.
Yeah.
I go over the top. Bundy does the whole train and the big splash. Then he unsuccessfully tries to escape the cage.
Well, there's a few funny moments, like when Bundy gets bladed, Elvira kind of thought it was real, you know, because of her comments, you know, they actually were quite genuine. She's like, stop this match, stop and everything. So I was kind of...
WrestleMania.
Someone's bleeding.
It was quite amusing. Like,
I thought I was going to hate this match. I really did. But I thought Hogan was such an amazing babyface in this match. I thought he sold his ribs really well. I thought commentators put the rib injury over well too. When Bundy was blading, the camera caught him. It's like Heenan knew this was happening, so he kind of walked up to the cage and put his hand in and covered Bundy's face. I thought that you get wrestling, Heenan. You're awesome.
Like, that's why I thought it was funny because I had the wire and not see that.
Yeah.
Hogan hulks up, gets the immortal leg drop and gets the big slam. It looked great.
Yeah.
And Hogan shoos Bundy away and escapes over the cage. Bundy tries to I almost escaped at the same time as you, but honestly he was like 4 seconds
It
wasn't close. Quite enjoyed this match. It was short, there were just spots and the crowd loved it, so all in all,
I definitely give this match a thumbs up. And I thought Heenan did his role really well too, and it seemed like Hogan was just after the match, when he got Heenan in the ring, seemed like he was just going to hit him off the turnbuckle, and like Heenan kind of called it there and he fucked him into the cage, and Heenan bumped really, really well. It was awesome. Hogan was great. I'm getting childhood flashbacks watching this. He was awesome.
Well, especially the blue cage as well, because you remember like the toys he used to have. There's always the blue cage. Awesome. Was awesome.
Who was the celebrity that was on the mic here? Who was that? It was like, Hulk Hogan is the champion of the world, and straight cut to a montage of stills from the video, public domain classic music.
I think it was like Jimmy Lennon or something. He was the big boxing announcer in the 70s and 80s or something.
Okay.
He's the guy that said names twice, like, you know, he was like, "Your winner, Hulk Hogan." Hogan.
Brilliant. Yeah. Very nice. Yeah. All right. So that wraps up WrestleMania 2.
All right, so this is WrestleMania 2, April 7th, 1986. So part one in Uniondale, New York. Attendance 16,585. So this was announcers Vince and then Susan St. James. Part two, Chicago, 9,000 Gorilla, Gene and Kathy Lee. Part three, Los Angeles, California, 14,500, Jesse, Lord Alfred Hayes, Elvira. So that would bring it a total attendance of 39,000, which is very small. And they could have had that all in one arena, really.
Didn't they have a deal with, like, the Trump Plaza or something for this WrestleMania?
They did, yeah.
Yeah?
They did.
Three hotels owned by Trump, and there were...
Oh, these arenas?
Yeah, right? Yeah. Yeah. Mm. I'm sure he got, like, Vince got paid enough money to cover his losses and ticket revenue by having all three in Trump's place, you know? A couple of brown envelopes, like.
Mm. See, that's why I think, if you think about, like, the numbers there, like, you can kind of see it in LA, especially. It's hard to describe. It's not empty, but it's kind of like a house show or something.
It did look like a house show,
it's
yeah.
It's very weird to describe it, but if you think about it, like, they say averaging about, like, over 10,000 per venue, like, that sounds ridiculous.
So results wise, I'll just run them down real quick. In New York, we had Morocco and Orndorff battled a double countout at 4:33 in a nothing brawl. Salvage Valentine's himself over George Steele at 7:06. Jake Roberts jobs out George Wells at 3:05. Mr. T beats Roddy Piper via DQ in a fourth round in a terrible boxing match. In Chicago, Moolah pins Velvet McIntyre in under a minute. Corporal Kirshner pins Volkoff in a flag match at 1:34. Andre beats NFL players and random wrestlers in a battle royal. And British Roydy Magoos become the tag champions in an enjoyable encounter with Valentine and Beefcake.
Definitely match of the night.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And in LA, see 12 matches on this card. And Steamboat pins Hercules with a high cross body at 7:33. Grandma Adonis pins
Ben
in a disgraceful match at 3:06. Jobber Funks actually get a sneaky win over JYD and Tito at 11:42, and Hulk Hogan retains the WWF title in a really enjoyable steel cage match with Bundy at 10:16.
Now, the whole pay-per-view, as in the order they go through, venue 1, venue 2, venue 3,
mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts on that? Do you like it? Would you prefer if there was a bit of a mix?
Yeah, because I mean, I think there should be, like, they're skipping over and back with, you say, the promos, and I'd say they're doing so badly at coordinating that. I'd say they probably maybe wanted to, but because of the syncing of it, I don't think they would have been able to do it. As we referred earlier, but you know, you're not actually seeing the match in sequential order. So yeah, I would have liked to have seen it, because I think the concept in one way, you know, was interesting on paper. I obviously get as many seats in the house, book them all out, but yeah, it's all over the place.
It's probably before pay-per-view was the kind of main revenue source, and it would still actually get people into the arena, like physically there. So they wanted to do it in these three places, but only had one show to do it in.
And you can sell more sponsorship time, because you can basically break up the sponsors per venue as well. So there was a whole lot of kind of, you know, working there, and then you're able to get each different type of celebrity there. So if you actually see in New York, like, we got Joan Rivers, you know, so if you actually look at the different contingents, LA, we got all the kind of movie type people. You know, so Chicago got, then he gets footballers. So it's interesting that he literally tried to draw on every part of every industry to get as many people in. So it's interesting strategy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So overall, what did you think of the pay-per-view?
I would say a lot worse for me than WrestleMania 1, just in terms of, like, it was all over the place.
You hated this show more?
Yeah, I just feel this is so badly coordinated. I just think what the big downfall for me was, even not so much the matches, it was just this kind of coordination problem they had. And I think for me, the fact that I'm only coming away with, you know, two matches I enjoyed, which is Hogan's and obviously British Bulldog, which is the Dream Team, the rest of them rubbish, you know.
It did seem very much all over the place. It seems like they were trying to push technology too far, and they just didn't have the equipment and the know-how to actually pull off a simulcast in three different places. Like, you can do it in 2000 or 2001 with WCW, but not in 1986, like,
yeah,
when pay-per-view wasn't even ready yet. TV shows or whatever, they, like, some theatres, it's a closed circuit event, so theatres wouldn't, they could show it live if they wouldn't, but otherwise people aren't seeing this event until you bring out the VHS, so, and, you know, the dirt sheet will take a month to come out, so you could just get a tape and distribute it to different TV networks if you wanted, so them trying to pull off three simultaneous live thing, it didn't work, and obviously it was a sham because they never did it again.
Like, yeah, last thing is it's the time zone, because obviously if you think the distance between, you know, we're going from one coast to coast. But was this the actual first pay-per-view? Because I read about it. Is this recognized as the first WrestleMania?
Well, the first, well, technically there was a little pay-per-view audience for WrestleMania 1, but the first pay-per-view was actually the Wrestling Classic.
Oh.
So they thought they got their feet off the ground with that.
Yeah.
And so they'd be ready for WrestleMania 2, but obviously not. They just put on too much on their plate, you know? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Knowing what you know now, would you have rather been in the crowd in New York, Chicago, or LA?
Ooh. You know what? I'd go for the one with the Hogan match. I just thought that match was so
LA, awesome. Yeah, because I could see Steamboat and Hogan. That wouldn't be the worst.
Definitely. LA myself as well, because you got the main event with Hogan and you got to see Steamboat as well, so that's a winner.
And Elvira.
And very nice. So I did notice that of the three venues, each one got a real workhorse. New York got Savage, Chicago got British Bulldog, and LA got Steamboat. And just like that, each got kind of one kind of main event
as well.
So Mr. T and Roddy Piper in New York. I suppose the Battle Royal was pretty over, so give it to Andre in Chicago and Hogan in LA. So
yeah.
But that means that you're having your main events a third way and two-thirds into the show.
That's one of my major problems with this show. Overall, I enjoyed the show. I thought it was far better than WrestleMania 1, other than the obvious problems caused by having it in three different places, breaking up commentary teams, adding random women who know nothing about the show. But it's just like the match quality is all over. You know, normally a wrestling pay-per-view, you build up match quality and importance, but in this show it was like peaks and troughs. You know, so you'd build up to the big boxing match main event and then it would drop and you're down to fucking Uncle Elmer and then you're back up to the big battle royal and then you're back down to Adrian Adonis or whoever, you know. So the show was kind of a bit all over the place. I like the fact that there was actually a world title match at WrestleMania. That was a nice touch. And
first ever WWF title match at Mania, first ever steel cage match.
A lot of unnecessary celebrity involvement, but that just goes to prove that WrestleMania was never about wrestling. It was always about mainstream media and celebrity involvement.
It's great to have Savage, Steamboat and Roberts all on the winning team now. So all these shows will be bumped up in quality because they're all here now. So that's great. There's three reasons why we're watching these shows, you know. So alright, let's do a couple of awards. Alright. Sorry, Ook, how did you like the show?
That was great.
Award time. So who the Showstopper Award, who was the pay-per-view MVP for you?
Ooh.
I think
Piper did great throughout the show. Yeah. I think Jesse Ventura was one of the MVPs.
This is a different viewing. So if you took out three of Piper's promos, because I didn't get him cutting any promos.
Right,
I got a promo package at the start. It wouldn't have come off like that. So I'm going to go with Steamboat. Like, I really loved his match with
Hercules. His match was better than I thought it was going to be.
It was fast-paced and it was short, and it made me feel good about this is why we're watching it.
Yeah. I'm going to say Jesse Ventura. He added a lot to the main event and to the Bunks match. And, Jesse Ventura, I thought he was great.
No?
Yeah. I'll probably go with Hogan,
with his eye patch.
He did have a lot of promos as well, which were really funny. And he actually had a really good one with Jesse. I don't know if we got to talk about that one, but Jesse had a great line. He's like, "The good guys don't always win." And I just thought that was kind of cool.
He was so awesome on the show.
That is pretty cool. Okay, the Rob Terry Award. So who's the biggest Roidy Magoo here? Biggest jack body?
I think for me, it's got to be Morocco.
Yeah, as you said, it's the...
He was fucking ripped.
Incredible Hulk job,
Yeah, him, Orndorff was pretty ripped as well,
But he even, Marco's sweating the whole interview. He's he was saturated with sweat. You're thinking, what is the side effects of what you're taking?
I'll go for Orndorff, but it's definitely battling it between that opener, holy God.
Steamboat, is nothing to shy away from either. He was pretty ripped,
He was, but I just don't think he was...
He wasn't his mass. Mania 3 ripped,
He wasn't quite the mass of Morocco and Orndorff.
I'll go with the World's Strongest Man, Ted RC.
Amazing! The world's most average man.
And the Virgil Awards, worst person on the card.
I think for me, it's a tie between Susan St. Hu and Adrian Adonis. I despised him. He fucked up the Flair, the turnbuckle spot. Jesus Christ.
I was going to say George Wells. He was just in a job.
I thought he sold the snake really well with the foaming at the mouth and stuff like that.
He did, but he can't compare it to Susan St. Clair. She made me angry at the tape. because she was obviously an ignorant mark that knew nothing about wrestling and had no business.
She wasn't as bad as the blonde board who said, who admitted more than once in the show, this is their first ever wrestling show.
Kathy Lee,
I think by later in the show, they didn't interject with commentary. They were like, what do you think of her? What do you think? As opposed to her, it's like her and Vince. And,
I'm amazed they didn't get Joan Rivers on the mic. I mean, she would be actually able to talk, and she was there. Why wasn't she for those matches on the mic? Because she could contribute a lot and always has. Like, you know, she's quite vocal. And, but
she'd probably rip everyone apart, though.
But I think at least she should have some.
She'd be great heel,
Yeah, she's some colour commentator or something, you know.
She's a comedian.
Is it you're calling it St. Clair? Is it St. James St. Clair?
Same too.
St. James.
Susan St. James and Busty St. Clair, isn't it?
Susan St. Clair. It's a meta. So we're going to get a thing for the Tubbies.
Tubby Toast.
So that's up another OSW review. I think that went pretty well. I'm quite happy about that. Next time, we're going to do the first ever meeting between the 800 pound monster, Andre the Giant, and Hulk Hogan doing the business. This is your host, Jay Hunter, with Mr. OSC.
Yeah.
Neil.
Yeah.
And V1.
I don't know. Alright.
She went
hoss.